Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Jamie Tyrone, an author, patient advocate, and research participant. And we will be discussing her book, Fighting for My Life. Genetics and Alzheimer's disease promote sometimes difficult conversations. The question, would you want to know? Or would you not want to know? What would the ramifications of knowing this information have for you? We had an interesting discussion with Dr. Jessica Langbaum a few seasons ago on Dementia Untangled, where she really helped us understand genetics and Alzheimer's disease, specifically the risk gene for Alzheimer's, which is APOE4. Having one or two copies of this gene can increase your risk of developing Alzheimer's disease later on down the line. But this is your risk. This is not saying with certainty if you would develop this disease. So we get back to the initial question, would you want to know if you have a higher risk of developing Alzheimer's disease than someone without this genetic connection? What if you didn't have a choice in finding out that information?
Heather, you are asking powerful questions. And that discussion we had with Dr. Langbaum, that conversation was so wonderful. It provides so much information. That question you asked, would you want to know? My follow-up question is, and if you did know, what would you do? After the news, would you strive to live life to the fullest, to live it differently? Because of research, we know that there are things we all can do to fight for our own brain health, our longevity, and for future generations. And that list includes things like exercising, eating a healthy diet, practicing mindfulness and relaxing a little more, listening to favorite music, hanging out with positive people, and even getting involved in research. And we are beyond grateful to have Jamie join us today to share her very unique perspective and her incredibly inspirational story.
Welcome, Jamie. Thank you for joining the conversation.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for having me. It is such an honor to be with you today and you giving me the opportunity to share my experience and hopefully help others along their journey as they make the decision.
Well, before we get into helping others along their journey, I would love to hear your story. What led you to connect with the dementia community?
Well, it's a long story, but I will try and abbreviate it for you. I had been experiencing symptoms and was diagnosed with MS for quite some time. And then my neurologist one day said to me that, you know what, Jamie? He said, you do not have MS. We don't know what this is. So I will continue following you, but we have an unknown here. So a few years later, an opportunity came about that a study that was done was designed like it was in the direct consumer market, like 23andMe. Everything was done online, and they were testing for 23 different genes to see if you were at increased risk for certain diseases. So when I saw that MS was being tested for, my risk for MS, I couldn't wait to participate in the study and enroll, because I thought this might be a piece to the puzzle as to the confusion. Because at this point in time, I actually was using a scooter for mobility, and we still didn't have an answer. What wasn't on my radar screen, even though I have a strong family history, was Alzheimer's disease that was being tested. But I was 49 at the time, and I didn't even think about what the ramifications of knowing this information. There was no genetic counseling given. There was no information other than what was in the terms and conditions, basically informed consent. And you know how when you are downloading an app and you want it really, really bad and you just scroll through the terms and conditions and you sign a piece of paper? Well, that was my experience. So finally, one night I was alone. My husband was at work late at night, and it came through my email box, the results. And I couldn't wait to open it. I just couldn't wait. So excited. And the first thing I look at is for my MS risk. And I actually didn't have any markers at all. I was below the risk of the normal population. But way over onto the right-hand side of my results, it said, oh, by the way, you have two copies of the APOE4 gene, which put me at their calculation at the time at 75% lifetime risk, which seemed pretty high to me, but I wanted to know more information. So what do we do when we have a medical question? We dial up Dr. Google. And at that point in time, and I want to reiterate that things have changed from a statistics standpoint, but my experience was at that time, which was 13, 14 years ago, that the only study out there for the statistics was with Duke University, and it put my risk at 91% lifetime risk.
Wow.
And so my husband, bless his heart, I love him dearly. He came home. I was losing it. I had just one big breakdown, probably one, two glasses of wine, too many. And he came home and he said, what's going on? And I told him what had happened. And he said, what's your biggest fear? And I said, now, mind you, he's 13 years older than myself. And I said, that you'll have to take care of me. And my father was dying with Alzheimer's as we were speaking. And he said, Jamie, he said, don't worry about me. He said, I'll be dead by then. And I'm like, oh, it was just such a sense of humor and the levity that I needed for the situation at that moment in time. And the very next day he went out and he increased his life insurance for me. So that was my initial experience and how I found out about my genetic status.
Wow, Jamie, I can't imagine it had you been one of those moments where it's like you get the information and you immediately wish you hadn't seen it. And we know how your husband reacted and he brought humor to the situation, but what happened after the first couple of glasses of wine wore off? How did you move forward with this information?
Well, first of all, I went to the researcher, and as you listen to my story, you will see that I had a horrible experience with this research entity and how I evolved to having a beautiful, wonderful experience in another research project or study. So I went to the principal investigator and I said to him that I am having anxiety over this information. And he said that I should be happy to know this information because now I can change my lifestyle to quote unquote prevent disease. Now we all know that there are studies out there that show how we can decrease our risk for disease, but there is no prevention or cure at this point in time still, but there were moving positively at lightning speed right now. But at the time, there really wasn't a lot out there. I went into a deep, dark depression. My husband then came to me very seriously and he said, you know what, you need to figure this out. You need some help. He said, because I don't know if I can live with you like this. Now, I knew he wouldn't leave. He's a fabulous man, but this was my wake-up call. So I went into therapy, and I was diagnosed with PTSD. I had to decide at that point. I was at the point where I wanted to take my life. I had a plan. And so I had to decide whether or not to take the dark road or the bright road. And that's when my faith kicked in. And I said, if I feel like I'm living in a living hell right here on earth, I will live a living hell in eternity. And then a miracle happened. I ended up becoming a research participant in a longitudinal biomarker study. And I can't even begin to tell you how healing it had been for me, because I learned that the experience that I had previously should have never, ever happened. And this new experience gave me purpose. It gave me empowerment. It gave me information. And I am now a research participant for 14 years. And it has been the best decision I have ever made in my life. I get phenomenal care. I get updates all the time on what's going on in research. And it's the best thing, the best decision I've ever made.
What an incredible story. I am so glad when you were at that moment of the choosing the dark road or the bright side that your faith kicked in, and that today you are such an inspiration and one of our hero volunteer research participants. Talk to us a little more about, you talked about getting therapy, but talk about getting the help you need and the importance of advocacy for yourself.
Advocacy for myself has been huge because it's a sense of empowerment. And the fact that I am a research participant for Banner Alzheimer's Institute, it has been very healing. And as a nurse, having gone through nursing school, one of the things that had resonated with me and was so profound was that medicine is not necessarily about curing, but it's about healing. And when I came to Banner Institute and Dr. Ryman and Dr. Terrio and Jessica heard my story, they were so empathetic. I was the first person that went into this study, this longitudinal study, knowing my genetic status. And if it's okay, I can share a story. I was still in some, having some, a little bit of a depression. And Dr. Ryman was going to leave out of the country for a conference. And he was concerned about my mental health and well-being. And so he called me and he said, Jamie, he said, I'm going to be gone, but I'm going to put another doctor on what I call Jamie duty, just to check in with me, just to see how I was doing. And I got that phone call and I couldn't believe it. I was shocked that someone cared enough to make sure that a research participant was safe. And that has been extremely healing for me and empowering for me. And getting involved as an advocate in sharing my opinions about things, and they listen. And that's how research should be. And I feel very blessed to have had the opportunity to actually see the bad side and the good side. Because if you don't see the bad side, you don't appreciate the good side. So I feel very blessed to have had this journey.
One of the things that you said that really resonates is that medicine isn't necessarily about curing, but mm-hmm. about healing. And mm-hmm. I kind of, one piece of healing on this journey is embracing your reality. Can you talk to us about how you were able to do that?
That is a very tough question about embracing the reality. At first, I didn't want to embrace it. I kept saying, why me, God? Why me? Why am I going through all of this? And then I realized that my whole life was prepared for this moment. Having been a nurse, having been in business development, in hospital administration, and having met my husband, because he married me knowing that, quote unquote, that I had MS. And it separated the men from the boys, because now he knows that I have this huge risk for Alzheimer's disease. I may not get it at all. And staying engaged and social and keeping my mind active and being married to a very supportive human being has all been part of the healing process and accepting my reality for what it is, that I do have this risk, but as science is moving along very, very quickly at a rapid pace, I have hope. And wouldn't it be so wonderful to be able to say, gosh, I helped contribute to that through being a research participant and staying engaged and being an advocate. I'm pretty darn lucky. So my reality has changed. Would I have wanted to know this information in the beginning? Not necessarily. Probably the answer would have been no. But today, as we are talking, I have processed through it and I am healing.
I'm so glad that you are on that healing journey and hearing your story and how you have been so surrounded by people that care about you so deeply, from your healthcare providers to Dr. Ryman just checking in on you and making sure that someone was there to care for you in your darkest days, and then your husband. That in itself is so powerful. And you shared that with the testing back then, you wish you didn't know. You wish you wouldn't have found out. Yes. Could you give us advice for other people who are considering learning about their genetic status, or maybe they just found out unexpectedly? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And great question, because there are a lot of things that I learned along the way. First of all, that now that I know this information, I can be discriminated against. Anybody can be discriminated against from getting life insurance, long-term care insurance, or disability insurance, because now you know. And so I actually attempted to get long-term care insurance and was denied in the underwriting process. So if somebody wants to know their genetic status, it's a highly personal decision. I say, prepare yourself. If there's something, any product that you think you might need in your financial planning in the future, do that first. And then if it comes back that you do have an increased risk, you're prepared. And you don't have to worry about disclosing it because you didn't know it. If you apply for the insurance products afterwards, they will ask you, is there anything that you should let us know that would preclude you from getting insurance from us? And you would have to disclose it. So I say, take a deep breath, think about what this would mean, not only from a financial perspective and what you might need in the future, but also what it might mean to you and your family. For instance, I received two copies of the gene, one from each parent. My sister and my brother did not want to know what their genetic status was. In fact, they were like, really like, why did you do this? And I go, it was all by accident. I didn't mean to do it. But they now know that each one of their parents has this gene and they could possibly get this configuration that I have. So, but they didn't want to know. So my niece, who decided to be a little cavalier, even though she read my book, she decided that she wanted to find out. So she went to 23andMe, and lo and behold, she has one copy of the APOE4, which increases her risk. Now, what that means to her is that she doesn't have any Alzheimer's on her dad's side of the family, but she has it on her mom's side, which is my sister. So my sister finding out about that her daughter has one copy, statistically speaking, it came from my sister. And my sister was very, very upset about this because she did not want to know this. So as you're choosing to embark on this journey, I would recommend that you take your family into consideration upon doing this, because what it might mean to your family as a whole or individuals.
These are all really helpful considerations, especially when you mentioned at the beginning how we get those little disclosures and it's scroll and click, I approve. Thinking about the bigger picture of this, not only implications for you learning this information, but for your family as well.
Yes, it was a very difficult time, and the anger actually came out on me, which was like, I didn't tell you. My niece, I was pointing fingers to my niece. My poor niece was like, I can't believe I did this. And it was a little traumatic at first, but you have those conversations and you honor the family members if this is something that you decide to do.
So I'm curious to learn. You said it's been about 14 years since you first found out. And not only is the name of your book Fighting for Your Life, but I think you've illustrated today you are a fighter. And so I'm curious to learn, what have you done kind of since you went through that initial trauma of learning your genetic status?
Sure. And actually, the subtitle is How to Thrive in the Shadow of Alzheimer's. And so, again, when I first found out, I was a hot mess. I ended up getting help. I embarked actually on a very rigorous exercise routine that was actually supervised by a physician. And there were a lot of people in this class, which was great because it was very social. And sadly, he closed the gym. But I still maintained it for quite a while. But every time I went to the gym, I'm like, I'm only doing this because I have Alzheimer's risk and because I hadn't really embarked on an exercise journey before then. So I came to the point where I've drawn balance in my life, whereas I still have it in my mind that I try and be as active as I possibly can. Sometimes I do get fatigued and tired as I continue to have some neurological issues. So sometimes that's a little bit of a challenge. But I think what's been most helpful for me is obviously eating healthier, but staying engaged. The socialization for me has been the best thing because it keeps my mind going. My advocacy keeps my mind going. And there was a study actually that was done in an assisted living facility where they separated the population by those who felt like they had a purpose in life and those who felt like they didn't have a purpose in life. And they gave them the cohort cognitive testing. And those who felt like they had a purpose in life did significantly better on the cognitive testing than those who didn't have a purpose in life. So that only reiterated and rubber stamped what I'm doing every day, that I get up and I'm like, who can I help next? Who can I talk to next? What can I do to contribute to research? What information can I learn today? And so I think those are the things that have been very helpful for me. So I definitely, my average age of onset for Alzheimer's for symptoms is 65. I'm 62. But I do believe that I have a significant amount of cognitive reserve. Now, I will share with you, I did have an MRI done in the clinical setting that showed that my hippocampus, which is area that's affected, well, that is memory, is below the volume that it should be. But I feel that I don't have any symptoms at all. I'm cognitively normal. And I feel that by staying engaged, having a purpose, living my life to its fullest has helped me. And if I do end up getting Alzheimer's disease, it will be later on. It'll be past the average age of onset for my genetic status.
I'm so grateful that you shared about purpose and staying engaged. And just talking about your own journey with research, it really has demystified research. And I appreciate that so much. And you have had a little fun along the way. I've heard that you created a group called Babes.
Yes. So, when I first decided, what is my purpose going to be? I decided I wanted to raise funds and awareness for and help demystify research participation. And so, I formed an organization called BAVES, which stands for Beating Alzheimer's by Embracing Science. And how that came about was I don't have any children, but I had a minivan at the time that seated 8 people, and it was known as the Babemobile because it was like I became the driver for girls' night out or lunches or whatever because everybody could fit in the Babemobile. And so one day I am having one of my spiritual moments, and I'm like, what am I going to name this organization? And It just came to me. Babes, beating Alzheimer's by embracing science. I happened to be in the Babe Mobile, and there you had it. And it was, we are a group of women who we talk about life. And, you know, when women get together, we can solve all the problems of the world. So it just made sense that this is something that was fun to have and create. And it's been a joy.
And since then, too, you have also written the book, Fighting for My Life, How to Thrive in the Shadow of Alzheimer's. What's your hope with this book?
My hope is to demystify research, what empowerment it has been to be a research participant. It's not something scary. It's not something that, you know, you created in your mind, because I feel like I've created a family. I also wanted to help people understand, you know, and help make the decisions and help guide them as to whether or not knowing your genetic status is right for you. I also touch a little bit about caregiving and what I experienced with my father and the lessons that I learned, and, you know, how to create wonderful moments and memories and to put myself in his world. And then, you know, any lifestyle changes that we could make. It was co-authored by a researcher, and he gives his input on where we're at in research and where we're going. So those were really the key points. And I wanted to thank, and I highlight, you know, my participation, and to thank the researchers for all the work that they do, and hopefully encourage others to possibly embark on a journey of research and to add value to your life.
Jamie, this has been such an enlightening and empowering conversation. Before we close today's discussion, could you give us your final thought when it comes to genetic disclosure, research participation, or advocacy?
Everybody out here listening, you are empowered to make decisions. That's what's best for you. And so gain the knowledge, do the research, do the preparation. Knowing information may not be right for you, but it may be perfectly wonderful for you. It's an individual decision. Empower yourself, get the information, decide what you're going to do with it. There are so many positive things that are happening right now and very rapidly in the way of treatment. And so I see a big wave of people having maybe not wanted to know to knowing, and be your best advocate. And you have it in you. I never thought I did, but you do. We all do.
For our listeners who are looking to get connected to Alzheimer's research, you can visit endalznow.org for the Alzheimer's Prevention Registry. Today, our conversation has been with Jamie Tyrone, an author of Fighting for My Life, How to Thrive in the Shadow of Alzheimer's, a patient advocate and a research participant. We so appreciate you helping us untangle the genetics of Alzheimer's disease and to know or not to know.
Yes, thank you so much, Jamie. We so appreciate you being on the podcast with us today.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's my honor. And gosh, if I can just help one person along the way, you have given me the opportunity to do that. It makes my heart full, and it's part of my healing. Thank you so much.
Well, we just can't thank you enough. And so again, thank you for being a hero, volunteer research participant, and for contributing so much through your book and through sharing your story. And thank you, Heather, for another great conversation. And thank you to you, our listeners, for joining us. If you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
please visit our website at bannerhealth.com/Alzheimer's and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.